Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Welcome to the second week featuring father and son, Johnny and Jay Parrick. Johnny sang with the Kingsmen Quartet in its heyday back in the 70s, and his son Jay followed in his tenor singing footsteps, singing with Gold City Quartet in the late 90s and into the 2000s. In fact, let's start off with a song from Gold City featuring Jay Parrick. When he calls, I'll fly away. This is Daniel Britt and Friends.
Well, there once was a time when in my heart I was condemned to die. I was walking in my sinful, sinful way.
Sin's way.
Jesus paid the ransom for my soul. I bade this world goodbye. When he calls me, I'll fly, fly away. Well, when he calls,
when he calls me, I will answer. Here am I. This world of sin, I'm rejoicing in this good old gospel way. I am longing for the time when heaven I shall enter in. I am ready, should he call, call today.
This is Daniel Britt and Friends, and I've got today Johnny Parrick and son Jay Parrick on our guest line. Johnny spent an incredible amount of time with the Kingsmen. I say incredible because those years were dynamite. The awards that Johnny won with the Kingsmen and just the sheer volume of sales that came out of that decade in the 70s are incredible. We spent some time talking to Johnny. We'll pick up his story in a moment. But turning over to Jay was 3 months old when his dad got the call to join the Kingsmen. So as we talked about and mentioned earlier, Jay grew up around gospel music, grew up backstage, grew up near buses, and eventually that would lead to a very successful career as at the high part of a quartet called Gold City, which again, no small potatoes there. Jay, talk about your dream, at least maybe when it was put into your mind. Did you just want to be like your dad, like every little boy wants to? Or was there a defining moment when, hey, I think I really want to be a singer?
Yes, there was. I did grow up listening to Dad and the early part of my life, sitting behind concert stages and hearing Dad sing and seeing all these other groups. And that would just look like a lot of fun to me. And they, everybody had a lot of friends and it was just it all seemed like a big time to me. And so, yes, I wanted to do that. And then as Dad got out of singing full-time with a group and began his solo ministry and in evangelism, I would go with him, and still I wanted to sing, but I always wanted to sing with a group. I never did. I never had a big desire to sing by myself all the time, and I enjoyed that. But that's my heart always lied with the four-part harmony, band, and the instruments, and all that. So when I became a teenager, like all, I guess like most teenagers, I began to listen to all kinds of music. And I remember some friends of ours, we moved out to Oklahoma for a couple of years. And some friends of ours there in our church had bought us some tickets to go see Sandy Patty in the Maybe Center there in Tulsa at ORU. And I will never forget going to hear that woman sing and seeing her sing live in concert. And the things she did that night were absolutely incredible. And this is 1987, 1988, when she was at the top of her career. And I think that night, I remember where I sat. I remember something being indwelt inside of me that said, I want to do that for a living someday, somehow, some way. And after that night, I really began to focus on singing, and I really wanted to do that. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know with who I was going to do it, and I didn't know when. But, man, I really wanted to sing somehow, some way. And God opened the door. He just waited until 1994 to open that door.
So that you were about 16 or 17 when you were at the Sandy Patty concert.
I was about, yes, I was about 15, 16 years old.
Yeah. Was it, do you think it had anything to do with the fact that she is an ultra soprano and and that you are an ultra high tenor?
I was just amazed. Of course, I loved her voice before I saw her in person.
Yeah.
And there were two things that I was determined to do before I died, and that was sing with somebody, and I wanted to meet that woman in person. Mm-hmm. And she was, I had all of her CDs and her cassettes, mostly cassettes back then. But when I started to drive, man, that's all I listened to in the car. Mm-hmm. Was her. I had everything that she ever did. And so, and then when these people come up and said, hey, we've got these tickets, we want y'all to go with us, we hear she's really good. And I'm thinking, man, you don't know the half of it. And so then when they take us to see her live in concert. Of course, she had all these lights and effects. And
yeah.
I remember the closest I ever come to whipping both of my parents, she called all the kids on stage from grades kindergarten through sixth grade. And there I am, a sophomore in high school, and I tried to go up there. I wanted to go on stage. My mom and dad said, no, you got to stay here. You're too old. And of course, I still look like I'm 12 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you sure do.
Well,
I wanted to go up there so bad just to be on the same stage as she.
Yeah. Well, from one Sandy Patty fan to another, this may be something I've noticed with her. She can sing up in the stratosphere up there, but she doesn't just take on this operatic high church sound altogether.
No.
She puts a real person behind the lyrics she sings, even when she's hitting those high notes. And sometimes you just can't get away from that high church sound when you're singing that high.
That's right.
But you know what I'm saying? She, you know, you can sing operatic the whole song, or mm-hmm. you can sing like you're a real person singing a melody.
Well, I always had respect for her because she could not only sing She could sing really high, sure, but she could sing all different styles and sing it to the best, sing it better than anybody. And I was amazed at how she could go from a song, and of course they all contain Christian lyrics, but a song that said something like, "We shall behold him," and then to go into a gospel number that was that sounded like it came out of the 1940s jazz era.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Sound like she fit that era, and that my respect for her was her talent was immeasurable. Because to this day, she could be a professional at any of those styles to me. She could sing a song, very black sounding song, and my soul. I mean, just with more soul than anybody I've ever heard.
Yeah,
and but something else that struck me, and still to this day, most soloists. And it's hard. There's very few. And Dad's in the few. But most soloists, it's hard to go, for me anyway, to go hear a soloist, because it's hard to do solo work, because after you've heard two or three songs, you've heard about all they can do.
Sure.
And to have somebody to hold your attention for an hour, maybe even longer, by themselves, that's a lot of work. And you have to be very blessed and very talented to do that. And you have to know what you're doing. And but man, I could sit and listen to her sing for 5 or 6 hours without yawning the first time.
Now, were you at that concert? Was it just you and your parents, or were your siblings there?
No, my sisters were there.
Okay.
And my sisters got to go on stage with her, and I didn't get to go. I'm still bitter about it.
Well, listen, and let's talk about that. You're the oldest, right?
Yes, sir.
And so you're the oldest son. You got three younger sisters and Johnny. Johnny, you married a lady named Judy. So I guess it's natural to have Jay and then three girls, Joy, Jill, and Jenna.
That's correct.
Was that your idea or your wife's idea to go with Jay names?
Well, I guess it was just both of us. We didn't start out planning, because we didn't plan four kids either. But, you know, after Jay, we really tried to bring a halt to it. You know, Jay was, well, if they're all going to be like Jay, we just, you know. But, no, we had Jay, and then we had Joy, the oldest. And then when found out the third one was coming along, we decided to stick with that.
Sure.
And so it wasn't a, you know, pre-planned thing. It just kind of happened as it went.
What kind of temperament did Jay have growing up? Was he a good kid?
Oh yes, he was. He had bounced off the walls. He was really high strung. He, like he said, he loved drums.
Yeah.
He used to play on pots and pans and stuff when I was with the Kingsmen. And I remember buying him his first little drum set when we lived in North Carolina, and he was scared of it. He walked out there and looked at it, and I tried to get him to go play it. And I went over there and hit it two or three times for him, and he ran and hid. And I picked him up, and I kind of scolded him a little bit, I think, but then soothed him. Well, it didn't take long before he got over that fear. And sure. So, as he said a while ago, he loved drums, and he played drums in high school. But he was. He was not the kind of person that was, you know, a lot of trouble. Mischievous, yes. Picking on his little sisters, yes. All the time, but no, he was a good kid.
So what about the ladies in your life, Johnny, your wife and your girls, were they attracted to music in any way, or were they like, no, that's what the guys do. That's for the guys.
Pretty much what you just said. My wife supported me in it wholeheartedly. And of course, the way we traveled, we didn't take our wives. There was not enough room. Cause there's always at least 8 guys on our bus, we'd take our kids once in a while, but my family was very supportive of it. Joy was born, matter of fact, about 2 or 3 weeks before we recorded Big and Live album, Joy was born, and she grew up in it too, but all my kids can sing.
Sure.
They all can sing, but she is just not big into it. None of them were ever big into the kind of music we did or the style so much, but they've always been supportive of it.
And so when Jay gets the job with Gold City, they're thinking, oh boy, here we go again.
Well, I think the sisters were glad to see him leave. I don't know. he was in college when he got the job with the Gold City. And so he called me and was very excited. And, and, uh, by this time, you know, we were really conservative in what we did. We prayed about it, and we knew the Lord had opened up this door for him, and we can see the evidence of it, the fruit of it, actually, later on. But, it was very exciting.
Johnny and Jay Perrick, father and son, and we're following their stories today on Daniel, Britt, and Fred.
For years I've been waiting, I'm anticipating the dawn of that glorious day. He'll break through the skies and the dead will arise, then he'll take his children away. While the Spirit is calling and mercy is falling, you'd better get your name on the roll. So when the trumpet starts blowing, take comfort in knowing your sign's still delivered and ready to go.
I'm signed on that.
Hey, Jay, let me ask you this. And this is news to me, so I want to get the lowdown on this. Because I didn't realize it went down this way. Is it true that you came in immediately at the exit of Brian Free singing tenor for Gold City?
Yes, sir.
So there was no in-between guy?
He wasn't gone an hour. Matter of fact, his last night with the group was my first night.
Wow.
Sonny Simmons had two singings a year, and he had two big singings there. He had the New Year's Eve singing in Charleston, West Virginia, and then he had a New Year's Day singing in Birmingham, Alabama, on January the 1st of the new year.
Hmm.
And they were both very big. They had all the big groups there at both of these singings. And so Brian's last night, Brian and Ivan both, their last night with Gold City was January the 1st, 1994. And my first night was January the 1st, 1994 in Birmingham, Alabama.
Hmm. Maybe I'm just getting old. I had no idea. I thought that you came later or there was an interim period or something. But I guess those guys stuck around to the mid-90s and then you picked up the reins there. What was it like following in such, well, big shoes, frankly? I mean, Brian Free.
It was huge. It was I was scared to death.
You were terrified?
I was terrified. I really was. I had only been married 6 months when 94 kicked in, and we met, and Tim Riley called, and after I got the job, he said, just be in Birmingham at the Civic Center there, and you will sing before the new year kicks in.
Mm.
And the next day. And so that night, the first everybody does two rounds. And the first round, Ivan, Brian, and Steve Lacy, and Tim, and the band did their final set. They did about 35, 40 minutes. And then they left. They left the stage, and then there was intermission.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were doing the King's Gold was still
sure
going on. And so the second half, after the intermission, Brian and Ivan did not come back out with Gold City for King's Gold.
Hmm.
But myself and Mark Trammell were the two new guys, and so we came out for the first time with Gold City doing King's Gold, and then they let us sing a couple of songs that night by ourselves.
Wow. So tell me how you got that gig. So for 16, 17 years old, you got the desire to sing, and then some time passed, and I guess you went to college. And so tell me, pick up, but like 16, 17 from that Sandy Patty concert to the college years when you got the call from Tim Riley. Give me the story of that in between time.
I really focused on my singing. I really wanted to sing really bad. And the only outlet, the only avenue that I had was through the local church. My dad, when we were in Oklahoma, Dad was minister of music full time for a couple of years out in Oklahoma, and so there was a little church, kind of out in the country, so to speak, not far from our house. And I had just learned to drive, and every so often, probably about once or twice a month, this little tiny church would call me and say, "Would you come just lead the music for our Sunday worship?" And it wasn't big enough to have a choir, and I would lead the music for for congregation, and then I would sing a special. And they would pay me in cash, you know, and just give me a little offering there, and then I would come back home. And Dad wouldn't let me do it too often because he wanted me to be in church with the family. But once or twice a month, if at the most, I would go up there by myself, and I would lead some congregation, and then I would sing a special. And so I kind of began to sing, and I bought a lot of soundtracks, and I had to kind of follow what was going on in the gospel music industry so I could get some good songs.
Sure.
And so I finished high school and did all the all-state choirs and the all-district stuff and got involved in a little bit in the band thing. But when I got to college, I sang with a little part-time group, and man, I had a ball doing that. I didn't realize how much fun that was, but we would sing. And of course, you know, we sung for every church homecoming and and things like that, and we could sing anything we wanted to. There was no pressure. We weren't planning on going full-time or trying to sacrifice this or that to make it. We were just kind of filling time and scratching our itch, so to speak.
Sure.
But right after college, I left college, was engaged to my wife. We got married in August of 1993, and it was October in the fall. And I was full-time minister of music and youth at a church up in Kentucky. And out of the blue, Tim Riley called my house. And I was at work. My wife, we had one car. She jumped in my car, and she came and found me and said, "You've got to come home right now." And I thought something was wrong. And I said, "Why? What's wrong?" And she said, "Tim Riley of Gold City just called the house, and Brian is leaving, and he wants you to try out." And I remember scolding my wife, and I said, "Baby, that's the cruelest thing a woman could ever do to a man. You know, how dare you come rushing in here and get my hopes up?"
Yeah.
And she said, "No, I'm dead serious." And so we jumped in the car and went back home, and I called the number, and sure enough, he answered, and he said, "Brian's leaving, and we would like for you to audition. We've got some guys that are going to audition, but your name has been put in the pot here to audition. We remember your dad. And you've had a couple of people recommend that you might be able to do the job." And so, sure enough, as it worked out, God just dropped that group right in my lap, so to speak, because that was on a Monday. And Thursday night, they were in Lexington, Kentucky, which was probably 2 or 3 hours from where I'd lived at that time. And we met them over there on Thursday night, and I tried out early that afternoon, 3 or 4 o'clock. And he said, "Are you staying for the concert?" After I finished trying out, and I said, "Yes, I was planning on it." And he said, "Well, I want to talk to you because you're the man for the job." And so I don't know what they sang. I don't know what they sounded like that night. I was in space after he told me that. I was sitting there beside my new bride, and she knew that's what I wanted to do, and I couldn't believe it. So after the concert was over, I said, I need 3 or 4 days to think about it. I've really got to pray about it because I'm full-time in a church. I just got married, and I know my flesh wants to do it, but I got to have some time to pray about it. And I couldn't believe driving home that night, I didn't just jump in there and say, "Yeah, I'm coming." And but I spent the rest of that weekend praying about it. And he said, "Well, I've got to know because I've got tenor singers coming in from all over the country on Tuesday." He said, "I'll call you Monday night." So I prayed about it, and I had a peace about it. And by Monday morning, I knew I could go.
Yeah.
And so all day Monday, the phone never rang. And finally, Monday night football kick came on, and I watched the first half of that football game thinking, "Well, he's forgot, and he's not going to call me. He's found somebody else."
Huh.
And at halftime of that ball game, Tim Riley called me. And so I knew it was perfect will of God when he waited till halftime.
Exactly.
But he called and he said, "Well, are you coming?" And I said, I'm your man. I'll do it. And he said, "You'll start January the 1st. Well, this is October.
Yeah.
So I had to wait nearly 3 months. And those were, I thought, the longest 3 months of my entire life.
Oh, man. Well, you had to relocate, I guess, huh?
Yes, sir. And I spent those next 2 or 3 months driving back and forth a couple of times to Alabama. I had to find a place to live. And and that kind of thing. And, of course, I resigned at the church I was at. And so, yeah, it was – I needed the time. And actually, I had to go – I couple of times I met the guys in Nashville, not to record, but we did a couple of photo shoots there. We took pictures of the new group.
Mm-hmm. Tim probably didn't have to hire tenor singers that often. You were probably, what, the second in Gold City's history, at least since
pretty
it had
much,
been sold
yeah,
to
them? Yeah. Now, when I came, before I got there, there were four owners, Brian and Ivan and Tim and Gary Jones, all owned the group.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got there, Tim had bought Brian and Ivan out. Of course, they left.
Right.
And when I came, he and Gary Jones owned the group together. Tim had controlling interest. But then after that, Gary was not there very long. And
sure.
So when he left, he bought him out. So he was the sole owner. But there were only about three full-time tenor singers. Bob Oliver was the original tenor singer. And he lives out in California. He was before Brian.
Yeah.
And but then they hired Brian. And then when Brian left, they hired me in 94.
So you take the helm there. I mean, tenor is, all parts are important, but tenor in gospel music, they're expecting a lot of superlatives, a lot of high notes. I mean, you probably learned that from your time with Johnny and the, what they call the three chords and the cloud of dust numbers and stuff like that. So, so were you prepared vocally, like your dad mentioned earlier, not being prepared to sing with the Kingsmen, to sing hard and loud? Were you prepared to sing night after night at those levels?
No, sir. By no means was I prepared. I thought I was. I was 22, 23 years old, and, man, I had the world by the tail. I was doing exactly what I wanted to do, and that's who I wanted to do it with. And I thought, well, there's, you know, I don't know that I'll be able to advance now. I've done everything I wanted to do. I'm with who I wanted to be with. And, it was about 3 or 4 months. We were singing in Montgomery, Alabama. And I thought everything was fine. But Tim called a meeting back there in the back with the four vocalists. And he shut the door in the back, and he'd never done that. And he said, boys, we don't sound too good, and I'm tired of it. And, he looked right at me. And he said, you've got to get some help. And basically, I was not accustomed to singing four nights a week, 2 hours straight. And it was a stamina problem, and it was a breathing problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what do I do? I mean, I don't know. You know, I tried out. I'm good enough to get the job. I ought to be good enough to keep it. And he said, no, I've got a guy that'll help you. So he called Steve Hurst, and I went to Nashville the next week. And the guy showed me how to breathe from my diaphragm instead of my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it was one time. It was about a three-hour lesson. And after that one lesson, it made enough difference, and it saved my job.
Hmm.
But it was pretty bad.
Well, listen, what I remember wasn't bad at all. And the project that sticks out in my mind, and you've done so much, and I hope I'm not I don't mean to diss the other projects you're on, but the one that really sticks out is the one that has God's Building a Church.
Yeah,
and,
what a great lifestyle.
Yeah, what a great lifestyle. Man, what year was that project? Do you remember?
That project was probably 97.
Okay, so you'd probably cut a couple albums by then with them.
I had. I probably did around 20 different recordings with the group, and then we did other little things. But that was, I had been with them about 3.5 years, close to 4 years when we cut that project.
The sound of that was pretty versatile, would you agree, of that particular project?
I would.
Did you have any, you talked about being a fan of Sandy Patty and how versatile she was. Do you think any of that played, did you play a part in any decisions that went into producing that?
I did not. The only thing that I would have a say in was my part.
Yeah.
I did not produce any of our recordings. But I do think because I was a fan of hers and she was so versatile, sometimes there's a call for that to be versatile. You need to be able to sing. You need to kind of be able to do different themes and variations on your own style.
Hmm.
And so I think because I was a fan of hers that when we would have a little song that would go a different direction, musically, I think maybe that did help. Maybe that that did play a part in it, and I could follow along a little bit easier, so to speak.
That's the voice of Jay Pirick, and we've got Jay and Jay's father, Johnny Pirick, on our guest line today. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends.
For much too long, the church has been an underdog to the feet of men.
God building a church on the rise.
It's been trampled on in the heat of the fight. This church is God's eternal bride. It's almost time for the church to fly.
God building a church. God's building a church.
It's gonna march like a mighty army band.
God's building a church. It'll be water to a dry and barren land. God's building a church.
It's gonna rise from a valley of dead dry bones.
Sanctified, glorified, filled with the Holy Ghost power and might. Purified with fire divine. God's building a church.
On Calvary's tree it started there. He handed it down to the hands of men.
God's building a church on the rise.
Oh, Satan's about to run in fright as the saints of God in glorious might race across the enemy line with holy banners waving high.
God's building a church.
It's gonna march like a mighty army.
This is Daniel Britt and Friends with Johnny and Jay Pirick, father and son. We're hearing part of Jay's story now. Johnny, I mean, is this just a moment where you think, wow, I mean, you'd have been proud of Jay if he'd opened a law firm or opened a butcher shop or anything. But the fact that he followed in his father's footsteps, I'm sure that has to be quite thrilling.
It really is. And it was not my plan. I did not program Jay intentionally to take up gospel music. If I can insert one little item that made the difference in my life to make a difference for him, it was after I left the Kingsmen. And I was on staff at a little church. And I was full-time music and youth director. And not the one in Oklahoma that he mentioned, but prior to that. But after my first year or two after leaving the quartet, I was on staff at a church. Well, it was during those days that I became a Christian. And so our lives changed. Instead of being promoting self and through gospel music, trying to keep that image alive, well, things changed. Well, as Jay grew up, I saw his life change. And whatever he wanted to do, that's what I wanted him to do. I never tried to program him to do anything, but I knew he had the talent for music. And when he called me and from college that day, and or well, actually up in Kentucky, is when he called me and said the because the other groups had called him, but it was when Tim called him. I could tell by the excitement in his voice, and I felt good about it because I knew Tim, and I said, Jay, you know, whatever the Lord leads you to do, we're going to be behind you. And so we didn't try to talk him out of it or talk him into it, and because we knew that if the Lord was in it, the Lord was going to open up a lot of great things, and like He did for our lives, and so and He has, and I'm extremely, if I can use the word proud, I'm extremely proud of him. I was then, I am now, and as well as all our children. I'm just as proud of my daughters as I am my son, and they didn't go into some kind of fame.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So it's not about. Yeah, I was excited. He followed my footsteps, but I'm just excited that he's with the way he went. But it's like I say, I have to say that for all my children. I'm just as excited for them as I am Jay.
I mentioned this at the beginning of the broadcast, and the turn of events that's kind of cool in my mind. Johnny sang with the Kingsmen, Jay sings with Gold City, and then. The connection is that Kingsmen and Gold City were great friends. I mean, these groups worked together in the King's Gold era. When did that start up? Johnny, that was after your time, right?
Yes, it was, as far as doing the King's Gold. That was after my time. However, I was there when Gold City was born.
Wow.
I mean, I was with another group. I had left the Kingsmen. And Gold City was born in Dahlonega, Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was Dahlonega, I think, was called a gold mining town or something like that.
Yeah, well, they had a gold rush there.
That they did, and that's where the name came from.
That was the original gold rush town.
Yeah,
that was before California.
Right, and that's where that name came from. And a good friend of mine, whom I knew with the Kingsmen, wanted a quartet. He couldn't sing, but he loved gospel music, and he would have us come over to his church, and we did things for him, and sang with him and stuff like that. And then he later on, when I was singing with the Heisman when this took place, there was a little old group out of Mississippi that went over there and kind of joined forces with this man, and that's where it was all born. And as he said, well, Bob Oliver was in that group, and they changed the name to Gold City. That's where it all started.
And we've had Brian Free on this broadcast talking about the history of Gold City. And we've had Gold City, I think it was not long after Jay left. Before we put the book in on the Gold City era, talk to me about King's Gold. Was there ever maybe a reunion point or just a night when Johnny was in attendance to where Kingsmen, Gold City were there, and they called Johnny up, and Johnny and Jay, were you both able to sing together kind of in your positions as tenor for these groups?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That happened, took place
that happened
two or three
several
times.
Oh, really? Cool.
And it was pretty cool how it worked out. One time, my grandfather, Dad's dad, still lived out around Fort Worth, and we sang in Fort Worth every year. And with Gold City. And the Kingsmen were always there. It was always us and the Kingsmen, and then at the second half, we would do King's Gold out in Fort Worth. And my grandfather would always come see me when that singing would roll around. He would come out and see us, because he was still a big fan of gospel music. And I would spend a little time with him, and then I wouldn't see him again for another year. And the last time before he died, that spring, we were scheduled to make that run. We did Oklahoma City and we did Fort Worth. We'd go out a little further west. And so Dad and I talked it over, and Dad had some time off. And he said, well, what's the possibility? I'll just ride out there with you, and then I'll get to see Dad and the whole thing. And only we won't tell him. And so it was really cool, because we came out there and got our sound check and the whole bit. And sure enough, my grandfather walked in. I said, now, you're staying for the whole night, ain't you? And he said, well, sure. And after it was over, we did our first round by ourselves, and the Kingsmen did theirs by theirself, and he was having a ball. But after the intermission, we all did King's Gold, and Jim Hamill was still there and was still traveling and doing the King's Gold thing, and he called Dad out. And Dad and I got to sing together on King's Gold, and I think even then, Dad and Jim and Dad, was Foxy there that night?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so it was the original four that I grew up here, and was Dad and Jim and Foxy and Ray Dean. And it was quite a surprise for my grandfather to see not only his grandson but his son sing again, and with the four that he started singing with. And then not long after that, my grandfather died. And so it was really good that one took place. And then anytime we were close where Dad lived, Dad and Mom would come see us. And and anytime they would see us, especially if Jim and Foxy, if the Kingsmen were there on the venue with us, then they would always call Dad up. And so Dad and I got to sing several times, whether the Kings were there or not.
Sure.
Yeah, Dad would even call us up, too, and once in a while. We used to do Looking for a City together, you know, just. And we did that in Fort Worth that night.
Yeah.
Just me and Jay.
We when my daughter was born, my daughter was born in 98, and we very rarely sang on a Monday. But because of the Singing in the Smokies, up where the Inspirations are, Gold City was booked on that particular venue on a Monday. And my wife went into labor that Sunday night, and I had to leave. And so I met my wife in Birmingham at the hospital for my daughter's birth. Dad was there and flew out and filled in for me up at Singing in the Smokies that Monday night. And so Dad actually sang tenor for Gold City for one night in my stead. And I talked to some of the guys later after that happened, and I asked Mark and Tim and Jonathan, I said, you know, guys, how did Dad do? And they said, well, he did okay. You know, the first half, he did okay. He was 50-50. He said, but we tried to do all the Gold City stuff. He said, but second half, we come out and we let him do Glory Road. He said, and then he mopped up on Glory Road. and of course, he had done Singing in the Smokies, you know, twice as many times as I ever did it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the people up there still knew him and remembered him from singing with the Kingsmen. And so he set the place on fire.
Wow.
With Glory Road when they let him go back and do one of his numbers.
Goodness. Now, oh, by the way, back to the comment you made about doing Looking for the City together. Who won?
Well, we came to a point where we stopped.
Here's what I always tell him, Daniel. You know, Dad's always been a better singer than I am. But, I mean, I'm just a whole lot better to look at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, yeah, I got
that. I'm a lot easier on the eyes.
Sure, sure. And no comment from Dad?
Well, I don't want to take up the rest of the time defending that or rebuking Dad. So.
Here's a sample from the project featuring Jay and Johnny Perrick together in His Steps on Daniel Britt and Friends.
I was drifting on life's highway, bound in chains I could not see. Then God placed His arms around me. From these chains of sin I'm free. But didn't know God.
son. Won't nobody like it but the people.
Well, with family playing an important part in, like I mentioned before, and if you're singing harmony with like a mixed group, you know, it really makes a difference, I think. You put a family group to do a cappella, and I think a majority of the time you're going to find there's something special that happens. Do you think that since Johnny was tenor and Jay's tenor, and you both have successful careers in gospel music, do you think there's a genetic thing there?
I would think so, because, you know, I don't have a recollection of my grandfather singing very much, very vivid, but I have heard the man sing, and he could sing, and he had a great range from what I remember. But Dad could probably tell you even more about that, but I do think that it is partly genetic.
Yeah, my daddy was a tenor singer also.
Whoa.
Mm. And so, yeah, and my mama sang. She was a soprano, a very good singer. Like I said, we sang trio when I was a child, and all the singing we did was a cappella.
Wow.
And we used to go to in Texas, they had all-day singings and dinner on the ground. Now, that was my life, yeah. And that was my church in those days.
Sure.
Frank Stamps, who had the Stamps Music School, Frank became a very close friend of mine, even though I was very young and he was, you know, on up in years then. But he was a real good friend of mine, and so that just kept that spark going. When my family's home, my kids are home, Jay and myself and the girls, my wife, we'll all sing, and sometimes we'll come to church, and if they're here like Christmas, we'll do two or three songs, and we'll do them a cappella.
Wow.
And now, Jay's wife, Carrie, is an extremely good piano player. And she'll play for us, too, sometime. But, I've got a recording of us that I made pastoring a church where I used to pastor before I came here. And I've got a concert, Christmas concert we did, and I've got that on tape.
Hmm.
And I've still got that. And it's not going anywhere. No one's going to get that from me.
Sure, sure.
But it was really good. It really was. The harmony and the blend, the family. I just, you know, there's nothing better than family blend.
Jay, were you there towards the end of Tim's time performing with Gold City?
I was. Tim had a lot of, his health began to bother him somewhat. Now, he wasn't dying or anything like that.
Right.
But Tim had been doing this a long time, and I could see it. I think the rest of the guys that were traveling with him at the time, we could all see it. I think he was just getting tired. And, he'd spent his whole life out up going up and down the road. And I think he had a shoulder replacement and all kinds. He began to have a couple of surgeries. And so my last year, he began to miss some time on the road. And that's just something you didn't do.
Hmm.
And plus, I could just tell it was beginning to weigh on him, and I think he wanted to go home. So I left in 2004, and I remember sitting in his office when I resigned, and he knew that I was probably fixing to leave. And he said, give me some reasons that you're thinking about leaving. And one of those reasons, I said, Tim, you're fixing to leave. Mm-hmm. I believe in my heart you're fixing to leave. And he said, well, I am. I'm fixing to retire. He said, but I have to. My health is going to be. He said, I don't want to die out here on the road. And so he, when he told me that, that's a change that I didn't want to sit through. I'd sat through lead singer changes. I'd been through baritone singer changes, and I'd been through piano players and bass guitars, and I'd stuck with him on all that. But I that was one of the reasons I didn't want to sing with anybody else except for Tim. And Tim was very good to work for. And which I'd have still been working for him, but I just enjoyed singing with the best bass singer that's ever lived, and that's Tim Riley.
Mm. And what an honor for you to pick up the high end while he's hitting the low notes, and then the rest of the guys in between.
I'm telling you,
it was a thrill.
There was nothing. There were times, there were nights that I had to snap out of it, so to speak, because I could hear him rattling the walls. Over there, night after night after night after night, and I thought, you know, nobody else gets to sing except for us, you know.
Sure.
And with him and Mark Trammell and Jonathan Wilburn, I feel the same way about.
Yeah.
They were just the very best to me at their positions, and I could I just thought, man, I'm a very blessed young man to be able to sing and stand on the stage with these guys.
So your reason for leaving was because you knew Tim was leaving. But at the same time, if this was your dream, was it, I'm sure it wasn't a decision you made lightly, was it solely based on Tim? Or
no,
I mean, I'm sure you
no
had
way,
some prayer
no
involved.
I still love to sing, and I love those men that I traveled with. I left because my second son was born in 2001, and in October 2001. And when he came along, there's something changed inside of me, and it was I just believe that God was trying to close that door, and I just myself, and I don't talk about anybody else, but for me personally, I don't believe I could be the father or the husband that I needed to be and be gone that much time. My son, of course, both my kids are very healthy. I've been very blessed with two healthy kids, and they're good kids. But I personally believe that God set that home up for the man to be in charge, mm-hmm. not the woman. And if I'm going to be in charge, I need to be there. Mm-hmm. I need to be with them. And I began to grow weary of leaving my family every single week. My daughter at that time was going to start school. And you know as well as I do, the older kids get, the weekends are when they begin to get busy.
Mm, yeah.
Well, the nature of the beast in Southern gospel music is sing on the weekends. And I began to realize I was going to miss everything that they ever did. And I think I saw it firsthand from Jonathan Wilburn. My last year there, it sewed up for me. Jonathan had a son who was a junior in high school, and he was starting quarterback on the high school football team. And every Friday night, we were gone. Mm. And every Friday night, between songs, between sets, between bites of a meal, Jonathan was on the phone calling a wife sitting by herself watching their son play football.
Right.
And I can't. Now, Jonathan did it and did it very well. His son is a very good boy.
Mm-hmm.
But I just said, I can't do that. And it's not fair to my wife to ask her to be both mother and daddy
sure.
to my kids. And that was my ultimate reason for leaving Gold City. And now I don't regret one second that I spent those 10 and a half years there. I don't regret one day of it. But I don't think I could do it another day.
Do you foresee when the kids are grown, maybe gone to college, if it's a mutual decision between your wife and you, do you see yourself maybe getting back on the road some?
No, sir. No, I don't know why. I think when God shut that door, it was shut for good, because every second that I was sitting in a hotel room or as long as every second that I was not on stage singing, I was miserable.
Mm.
It began to get very miserable. And I think it was just my time was so consumed with, I wonder what my kids are learning how to do today without me. Or I wonder what my wife is doing today.
Yeah.
And, you know, and something else, too. I mean, take this how you want to take it, but I married a good-looking wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was ready to go home and see her, not them eight hairy-legged boys on that bus. So, I don't. And I can go do a revival now or go to a conference or do something like that, and I'll be gone for about 2 days. And on the second day, I'm so homesick, I'm pathetic.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go home and kick my kids around and kiss my wife right in the mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like being home every night with my wife and kids. And to be honest with you, I think it does them good. I think my little girl sleeps better knowing that her daddy's a few feet away, not thousands of miles away.
Mm. That's a good point. Man, I hate to be an aspiring tenor sitting in your choir.
Man, you wouldn't have a thing in the world to worry about.
You know, I hit this note. Well, why don't you just hit it yourself? That's what I'd say.
I'm blessed. I got some good singers in my choir. They do a good job.
Well, I guess maybe we can wrap up this way. This is kind of on a light note. And Johnny, this mainly be something you would appreciate. But Jay, you would appreciate it too, because I'm sure you've all been there. at one time or another. And Harold Reed, who's currently with the Kingsmen, has been there for about 8 years. He's going to kill me for playing this, but because he said, I've been there for 8 years, and the one thing I get known for is messing up. Okay? So, so listen to this. This was in a concert recently, and this was with your old sugar stick, Johnny. Look for me at Jesus' feet.
This world of sorrow sometime before you do, don't for me in heaven.
What was that?
For me in heaven.
He messed it up.
Yeah, you hear what he did there, right?
Yes, I do.
That was on YouTube, and someone sent me a link the other day. I don't know how old that is.
He said, don't look for me in heaven.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Where do we need to look for him?
Yeah.
I said, you look for him.
Yeah, exactly right. We called him later and on the air on a broadcast live, and we said, Harold, you just told 2,000 people you were going to hell. He said, I know, and as soon as the word left my mouth, I thought, oh no, what do I do? And all the look on his face is priceless. So, have you ever had a moment like that where you said the wrong and one word like that changed the whole meaning of the song?
Oh yes, yeah, sir. Oh yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, the night we recorded that song on Big and Live, we had cue cards.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, we had cue cards, wow. And because we wanted everything right. Well, we were so nervous, and I messed up the words that night on that song. I sang them wrong. But they were so insignificant. You'd have to go back and listen to it. Then later on, years later, we did our first reunion up in Kentucky at the Quartet Convention. That was our first reunion. Foxy was still alive, and we did that. And we did that song. I did that song, and I forgot the words to it. And I turned around, and I said, Squire, you got in the middle of the song, I said, why are you going to be singing this? You wrote it. I forgot the words. Right in the middle of that.
Well, you guys are true professionals. I told Harold he's a professional, too, for handling it the way he handled it. But listen, you guys, not only professional, but great men and great singers. I mean, your legacy is going to live. And, Jay, even though you're young, your beauty will carry you, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you.
So there you go. Hey, guys, keep singing or keep serving where you are, and we remember you too fondly, okay?
Hey, thank you very much.
Daniel, thank you very much for calling. I have really enjoyed this. It's a pleasure speaking with you. I've never met you, I don't think, but maybe, Lord willing, we'll get to meet somewhere down the road. But thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Brother Daniel.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.